Welcome to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, everybody. I am so excited today because we have as our special guest, Jason Case. Jason's the CEO of Case FMS. How are you doing, Jason?
Doing great, Phil. Great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. I'm really excited you're here. It's been a while since we really talked in this type of venue where we're going to get in some really good conversation. I've seen you a few times at some industry events and quick hug, bromance hug, and how you doing, and say hi to Cindy and see ya, you know. So yeah. I'm looking forward to catching up with you.
Well, it's been great, Phil. I mean, I've probably known you for probably close to going on 20 years, I would say, at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, so yeah, really excited to be here. And, you know, thank you for having me. And congratulations to you and all your success in the snow management business as you continue to out there helping people grow their business and exit their business and doing those same things you were helping me with, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So it's exciting.
Yeah. 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 I'll never forget sitting in the, in Providence at a breakout session. We had I was facilitating a, panel discussion, and there were three panelists. You probably remember this. Your parents were in the room, and we were talking about succession planning even back then. And it was just that was probably one of the really coolest sessions I've ever facilitated because, you know, Alan Steinman was there, and that was the last, I think, symposium he made it to. Bob Smart was on that panel, and I think you were the third panelist on there. But yeah, so you're right. We go back a few years, but I absolutely want to talk about business, and I want to hear what's going on with you and with Case FMS and everything else. But I always like to start these interviews kind of going back to the beginning, like, because I think it's really helpful when people understand, like, where did this guy come from? You know, what's his background? Yeah. How did he get in this business? Like, what's behind the curtain? And so I always like to start with just like, where'd you grow up? What was it like, you know, in your family? You obviously grew up in a family business. So just kind of like, let's start there. What was it like? What was the family business, and what was that like? And kind of walk us through that.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, well, my grandfather started back in 1951. So it dates pretty far back, starting a construction business. My father being the eldest, you know, naturally took it on in the late 70s, early 80s. And as our immediate family grew, I have four brothers, so there's five boys, which is what you wish for when you have a site work construction business.
some operators. You know,
yeah, exactly. Some cheap labor. That was sort of our start and our introduction to the workforce at early age of, you know, really, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, getting out there on weekends with my father, banging stakes, shooting grades, learning how to operate equipment, understanding, the site work industry and utility installation. That's where my background started. So I'm certainly no stranger to equipment and excavation and handling really being in dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. And you got to have the work ethic to work in that industry. You know, it's certainly long hours, it's late hours, no different than snow. So it was interesting growing up there. And it's morphed from that point in time into so many different operations. Mm-hmm. But it was, my background is very similar to probably most of the people in the snow and ice business and landscape industry, where most of us have come from just, you know, salt of the earth, you know, hardworking families. And, you know, that's created a tremendous amount of great workforce. I think some of the best workforce in the country is in our industry. Mm-hmm. And it's because we all started at an early age, you know, hitting pavement hard and learn the hard knocks of you earn what you work for.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than growing up in a family business to teach you the value of work, because you just get out and grind it every day. You know, you don't have a choice.
But I was going to say, it's you don't have a choice. And, you know, there's no such thing as clock in and clock out when your dad is forcing you to get out there to do the job, you know. But, you know, as much as I hated it sometimes in the back in the days when I'm a kid, because all my buddies, you know, at the playground or doing whatever, and, you know, I'm working, it's I look back on that now and sort of I'm thankful. You know, that he instilled those characteristics and work ethic in me, because it's definitely it's helped me along my career.
Mm-hmm. You also had the opportunity to play sports growing up too, right? What were some of the sports that you got into?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was lucky enough to be surrounded by some great athletes growing up, and you know, basketball and football through my entire youth career, led into high school. Many championships in high school football and a state championship in basketball, which was a great experience for me and in the community. It was the first time that, you know, Adra High School had won a, you know, a state championship, and I think since 1943. And, you know, my year, I graduated in 1998, so it was a fantastic time in my life. Got to experience a little bit of fame there, which was a lot of fun. And that led into a collegiate career in football. Played a little basketball in college, but definitely football was where I spent most of my time. So it was an excellent way to continue that, you know, competitiveness and team and building unity amongst our, you know, and having some great coaches and all those things that help out kids when they're in their youth, build great experiences and learn, really. So it was a lot of fun. I still play today, actually, believe it or not, Phil.
Well, I believe it. I, you know, if I wasn't in law school, I'd still have my skates on. I got my bag ready to go. I say, look, if someone asks me to play tonight, I'm in. My skates are sharp. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, just dust the cobwebs off and you're good.
Give me a year. I'll be back on the ice. You gotta do something to stay in shape, but. So talk to me about college. Where'd you go to school? Was that a expectation? Was it like, everyone who graduates from my high school, you know, 98% go to college. Is that just what you did? Or did you have a scholarship, or did you go to actually like study something and learn something? or all the above?
You know, I had a great, I mean, my father was, you know, never had that real opportunity to go to college. I mean, I think he went to Northeastern for a year or two and then dropped out because he had to run the family business. And that was just what you did back then. And I think he was a huge component of his boys getting a college education, you know, learning, exploring different, you know, whether it's business or finance or whatever it was. I think given us the opportunities that he never really got, him, my mom. So, you know, it's something that I went to St. Anselm's College. It's a school in Manchester, New Hampshire. And like I said, I got to play sports up there, which is fantastic. And started in engineering and then transferred into business, but graduated, you know, a semester early. You know, I was done. Once football was over, I was ready to exit school. So I never stopped going to classes all summer. So just to get ahead of my education.
Nice.
And so I graduated in 3.5 years. And once I was out of college, my career really started at that point in time. I mean, my father always told me, get as many licenses as you could. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I got my CDL, my hoisting license. I started getting researching, you know, OSHA and my conveyor belt license, because we ran big plants down the pit. At the time, I was starting out building a landscape materials yard for my father's companies and expanding that, which led me to get my ICPI certification, my NCMA certification. I was also heavily involved in you know, in the snow and ice, as you know. So I got my snow and ice CSP, and all during that time, I went back to school at Northeastern at nights to get my construction project management degree, which was a 2-year process. Mm-hmm. So school didn't end after college for me. It was always about learning and getting educated in the trades, and you know, trying to just better myself and being the smartest guy in the room as much as I could be at the time.
Now, when you were up in New Hampshire going to school, you also did a little snow plowing on the side. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, that was kind of my first experience into, you know, I always ran equipment, as I mentioned, growing up. So I was a pretty good operator. And, you know, it was the best money you could make in college when there was a snowstorm. And, you know, back in, you know, 2000, you know, guys were, if you could operate, you could make 20, 25 bucks an hour, as opposed to, you know, making 15 or 12 doing something else, which what my college buddies
or were less. Doing. Yeah.
Or less, you know? So I'd work overnights in storms, and I worked for a great business right down the street, certified enterprises or something like that. But there was a great company, and they introduced me to, they were the first company I had known to use snow pushers. And so they were early adopters of pro technology and snow pusher technology. And this was around 2000. So pretty early when that technology came out. And I took a lot of those ideas after college, and a lot of those strategies that they were implemented, and took them down after school and implemented into my family business. And so I had a great start just from experience in the snow and ice industry, from just being out there and making some money at the same time, learning a lot.
Now, was your family business involved in snow at that point, or did you bring snow to the business?
You know, I think when you're in the construction industry, or even, you know, paving industries or whatever, I think snow is sort of a business that, you know, you're in just by default, right? You need something for the equipment to do in the wintertime. You need something for your employees to do in the wintertime. And that's the same as sort of my family business did it at the time, right? We worked for the state. We had a few contracts here and there. I don't think it was ever really looked at as an operation or an independent business line, or necessarily a division of the company. And that's sort of where I came into the business, where, you know, I was working for my father, helping him grow a landscape material supply yard, introducing brick pavers and retaining walls, which naturally was slow in the winter. I mean, we didn't do much. So snow and ice was a good fit to balance out a 12-month revenue stream. And, you know, that's what I started to look into and focus on. And I started going to trade shows, and just, I used to go to trade shows with a little notebook of the things that I was doing, or building plow maps and whatnot. And that's where I met Alan Steinman, who became one of my mentors in the snow and ice business. And he's the one that really got me involved in the snow and ice symposium. I didn't even know what Steinman was at the time. It was still pretty new. And he was really intrigued with the strategies and logistics, strategies I was putting together and sending out to my operations team in snow. So he sort of took me under his wing, and I went to my first symposium in Hartford, Connecticut. I'll never forget it. And, you know, he introduced me to everybody, and I was just floored. I'm meeting guys that were my heroes, that I heard about, that I read their books, you know, that I just loved to listen to and shook hands with them. And that really inspired me. And it got me thinking, this isn't something to do in the winter. This is a business. This is its own industry. And I don't believe that a lot of people looked at it that way, you know, 20, 30 years ago. It was just something we did in the winter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thank Sima and the people that started that organization for helping put snow and ice management on the map, and you know, people really taking it seriously as an industry, you know, customers taking it seriously as an emergency response, you know, that hundreds of thousands of people perform in the overnight hours. it's easy to wake up in the morning, Phil, and all the roads are clear and the properties are, you know, black and wet, and you know, people don't even think twice about the effort it took to get all that done.
Right. Yeah, I think it was when, so we met right about that time, because I remember probably the first time I met you, you were sitting at a table I was facilitating, probably a snack and chat or something. And I was talking about culture. I was talking about having vision and core values and different things. And you kind of waited around until everyone left, and you probably had your notebook with you, and you're like, I need all those things. you got to meet Bill. You got to meet my father. He's upstairs. And next thing you know, I'm chasing Jason around, you know, some convention. I don't even remember what city we're in, but yeah, it was a pretty exciting time. And you're right. The industry's filled with, over the years, you know, these legends and, you know, not so much legends, but just people that are willing to share. I've always felt the same thing about the snow industry, smaller industry. People are very willing to let their guard down, help the new guy figure it out, you know, give them whatever knowledge they have, open book. And more so, you know, and I do a lot of consulting in the landscape industry as well and outside the industry. And in some of these other industries that are more mature, you know, there's way more competition. People are way more guarded. There's more kind of backstabbing, and people are trying to one-up each other and tear the other guy down. And I just, at that point in time, I see some of that in the snow industry now. I didn't see a lot of it back then. Yeah, but no, I still see a lot of good things in the industry.
A lot of good things still. That didn't exist back then for sure. I mean,
we also didn't have social media where everyone was like ripping on everyone.
That's true. But I mean, when I was really involved in the SIMA organization, and it was a check your ego at the door mentality. Mm-hmm. And the philosophy was so collaborative. It was really about, how do we make this industry better? What are the things that we need to do to unify the, you know, this collective audience of snow fighters, and at all levels? I mean, the guy that has one pickup truck to the large regional or national companies that, you know, are managing thousands of locations. And, you know, we really tried to help build an association that, you know, catered a little bit to each and every one of those different levels of a snow fighter. And I was always inspired by those guys that, you know, that thought that way, right? They were like, everybody is our partner. And, you know, those are the true pioneers of the snow and ice business to me. The guys that really took the risk, stepped out there and built something from nothing and created this unified snow and ice environment for people to learn from, people to get educated, for, you know, manufacturers to, you know, develop their technology and sell new and innovative tools and assets to, you know, thousands of companies across the marketplace. So it's really turned out unbelievable. And I'm so excited that I've got to participate there and watch really that organization blossom and the industry grow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. I feel exactly the same way. And I was thinking, one of those people that, you know, is one of those pioneers was John Allen, who started Snow Fighters Institute. And, you know, right around when COVID was hitting, John approached Neil and I and said, hey, I want to focus on some other things. Are you guys interested in taking over Snow Fighters Institute? And we said, sure, we'll take it over. We'd love to. We'd love to see it going, keep it going. But we said, one of the things we said right up from the beginning, is we said, we're never going back to Erie, Pennsylvania, because no one wants to go back. No one wants to go back there. So that was number one. So, you know, and then COVID hit. And, but post COVID, you know, Snow Fighters is back on track. We are really growing Snow Fighters Institute, and we're super excited about what we have going on. But you are involved in Snow Fighters, you know, back in the day, early on, and kind of curious about what your experience was and you know, what was valuable, and like, did you meet any really cool people?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, John Allen is, you know, he's a legend, right? He's a legend in the snow and ice industry. You know, I think, you know, he's somebody that's paved the way for so many entrepreneurs to follow in his footsteps, and to do things that he started, and to, you know, maybe do them better than he did them, or learn from him and his mistakes. I mean, that guy has done so much for this industry. I mean, you can't say enough about it. And of course, you know, there's always that, you know, you make mistakes as you take risk, mm-hmm, right? So, sure. You know, I always had a tremendous amount of respect for John, and that's why he was always a great mentor to me. And I participated in Snow Fighters when he started it, because he recognized that despite how awesome Sima was, there was no real true focus group that took people and owners away from all the noise of the symposium and the trade show floor and out of these current sessions, and really put them into a room and to a collaborative group to focus on other things that are important to running and expanding a business. And I participated in one of his CEO events in Erie, Pennsylvania, which was a blast because I'd never been there. So it was fun to kind of see it. And, you know, it was a small group, maybe eight guys, maybe 8 to 10, you know, leaders of businesses and CEOs of businesses. And it was tremendous. It was great collaboration. It was great to hear other people's stories. And we didn't talk about snow operations and equipment. Everybody was an expert in that already, right? We talked about other things that, you know, makes a big difference in your organization, you know, finance and technology enhancements, business development, leadership, right? You know, as an entrepreneur, how to go from being that micromanager to the doer to also being the leader or the visionary of a business as it grows. You know, where do you want to be? Do you want to be a $10 million business, a $5 million business, a $50 million business? How do you scale for growth? All the things that were really relative to the people that were in that room. And a number of us were competitors, but we all, like I said, we checked our egos out the door. There was never any competitive nature in those forums at all. And I think John did a good job, and you and Neil do a good job today of sort of making sure that that philosophy is present, right? Guys, we're here to collaborate.
Super important.
And get better together, right? Let's learn. Let's be, you know, let's be transparent and learn from each other. But I'll never forget, one crazy character I met there was a guy by the name of Paul St. Pierre, who happens to be one of my best friends today. And, you know, Paul came in guns a-blazing, as he's a big personality and always this. Here's a guy right here that just he's doing $10 million landscape jobs in people's backyards and, you know, design build projects. And he's got all this snow all, you know, operation all over the country. And I'm saying, this guy is full of it. Who the heck does that? Like, it doesn't exist where I'm from. Like, nobody spends $2 million in their backyard. And so, you know, but we got pretty close, and he invited me back to his operation in Windsor, Ontario, from Erie. And I said, don't invite me, buddy, because I'll go.
Yeah.
He's like, no, come on. So I was like, okay. So
you didn't even go back home. You went straight there.
I didn't go back. We're straight from Erie to Windsor, Ontario, right? So, and I'm walking in, and the first thing he takes me to is his shop. And what do I see? I see his dad out in the field cutting the lawn. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of like how I grew up right now. This reminds me of my dad's working at home, probably doing something. And right away, it was just, there's so much synergy in how he was running his team, building his company, with the way that I was doing things. We became really close. And those are the relationships that you build when you venture out and you participate in things like Snow Fighters, right? Paul's changed my life in a number of different ways. And if I had never participated in those events, you know, who knows? I would have never met him, right? Mm-hmm. And I can say the same for you, Phil. I can say the same for John Allen, Alan Steinman, you know, Rick here. The list goes on. Bob St. Jakes, Bob Smart, all these guys, Brian Akehurst, many of them, you know, are not with us anymore. But guys that were there, you know, helping me when I was young and just learning the trade, you know, they were, you know, 20 years into the business already, mm-hmm. and participating to help educate me. So those are things that I'll never forget.
Yeah. Thank you for that. No, I hadn't heard that story about Paul, and, oh, that's cool. That's exciting.
Oh yeah. It's hilarious. Great guy.
But, I'm not surprised you did that, because I totally see you doing that. So, all right. So let's talk about business. So you got K-Snow Management up and running. The company grew fairly quickly. So what were, like, in the beginning, like, what was going on? Like, what was that like? What were the challenges you were facing? And what was the vision? What were you trying to become in the beginning?
Yeah, you know, at first we started as a, you know, we're a snow only company. There was only a couple businesses like that at the time in the marketplace that I knew about. And we knew if we had a true focus on trying to just be the best at something, right, we could make it happen. You know, my family business was very diversified. We had home building, construction, utilities, union, non-union. It was a lot going on.
You had a storefront. You did
retail. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Right. And, you know, it was tremendous amount of diversity there. But with K-Snow Management, which is what I started in 2009, it was really all about building a business, focusing on a business, and trying to be the best at that service. And, you know, it was very difficult to do without, you know, starting a business from basically not much. And the support of my family business was very helpful growing the business. And we started investing in some equipment, and we didn't have a choice but to partner with service providers at the time to help us, you know, manage all this work. So we really built a balanced business with, you know, a good hybrid model of self-performing. So we were investing in a lot of iron and trucks, and we also, you know, partnered with a lot of great suppliers, you know, to help us fight snow and ice. And we sort of were together as one unified organization. We were able to service our customers better. So I think that hybrid model was a big part of our ability to grow fast, right? And we just didn't do 100% self-performing, or we just weren't a true aggregator model where we weren't in the field. You know, we're definitely, we did both. And you have to build the infrastructure to accommodate both, which is not mm-hmm. easy to do.
Right.
So how do you manage suppliers and also have a self-performing
on operation? A big scale.
Yeah. On a big scale. And we were lucky to understand that on the early onset of the business. But really one of our main advantages, Phil, was we had some great people. You know, Bill Carello was my dad's CFO, and he ended up coming over to help me build K-Snow Management up. He's a true pioneer of the industry in my eyes, a guy that knows so much about snow and ice and is able to take an expertise in finance and leverage that to run the company by the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And keep me disciplined financially, you know, keep us in compliance, understand what risk management's all about, insurance. Those are the things that really give you a competitive advantage and allow you to scale. So that was very important to me. We had some great people on the early onset. Neil Glatt was another one, as I'm pretty sure you're familiar with Neil. So
we love Neil.
And Neil came in. He was this young kid, man. I mean, he reminded me of me when I was young. That's why I always loved him, because no was never an answer, or can't. He never said, we can't get that done. Never. I never heard him say that. And so any challenge that came our way, it was all about, how are we going to get this done?
Right. Well, he hasn't changed.
Yeah, I believe that. And, you know, so we just hit the pavement hard, and we took every opportunity we could, every customer challenge that we could. And you end up learning from the school of hard knocks by getting out there and making to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that time we were lucky to experience some of the biggest snowfalls the Northeast has ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you hear that was over 100 inches, right?
110 inches of snow. I mean, we were hauling 200 plus trucks every single night, you know, dump sites, pushing snow with D8s and, you know, 980 loaders. It was just, it was something that was, you couldn't anticipate, you couldn't foresee, and nobody had the playbook on how to get it done until the governor of, you know, the state calls you and says, hey, the Patriots won the Super Bowl, and I don't care what you have to do to clear every single MBTA station by tomorrow, but you have to do it. Right? That's the phone call I got.
Hello.
And you know,
you don't say no.
Yeah, you can't say no. so we put together an operation that I still to this day believe was a miracle. I think in that time we moved more snow than Case Snow Management moved more snow than the city of Boston. The amount of trucks we had running was, I don't even know how we found them. You know, it was just incredible. And it's, the growth is due to those experiences because they make you better. You know, those challenges make you better. It makes your team better. It pulls your team and unifies your team together. And those are some of the things in the early onset of our business that really helped us feel like the sky was the limit. I mean, if we could succeed in the worst snowstorm to ever hit the Northeast, then you feel empowered. You can do anything, right? And that's the whole team felt that, right? It was a major success mm-hmm. story.
Well, you know, Jason, I've worked with companies all over the US, all over Canada, from every corner, from coast to coast. Some days, coast to coast in the same day. Put my toe in the Pacific Ocean and put my toe in the east, you know, the Atlantic. Been there. But from my perspective, one of the greatest advantages, and all those things you talked about are all very valid and they're all important, but one of the greatest advantages is growing up in a family business and having that work ethic. Because I've never seen, one of the things that Case Snow has, or Case FMS now, is someone named Jason Case. And people all the time, I can't even tell you how many times people said, I want to be like Jason, help me do what Case did. And, you know, I'm polite, but my response is, well, you can't, because there's only one Jason Case. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time at your house and with you in your business, and I've never seen someone work so hard and be so focused on a daily basis, putting in the 12, 14 hour days, you know, grinding all day long, 12 hours, then have dinner. We're at the bar with your dad drinking till 2 a.m, having a couple of cocktails, and your dad sending emails at 3 a.m, making your whole staff mad. Then we're back at it the next morning, like just grinding it every day. And I'll never forget this little, you won't even remember this, but at these things stand out to me because I'm an outsider. I'm a Midwest guy. We're in your office, and this phone technician comes in to change an outlet or something. You wanted something moved. You wanted a new HDMI port in your conference room or something stupid like that. He thought he was going to come in there and be there for like 5 minutes. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning. He pops in. Hey, I'm here to put the new outlet in. You're like, dude, you are not leaving. Call your wife. Call your boss. Like, I have a list for you. He's like, no, no, no. I'm here to do this one work order. I got 20 work orders today. You're like, I don't care. You are not leaving. Like, I don't know if you bribed the guy or paid him off or like, I don't know what you did, but that guy did not leave until like 5:30. He was there all day. He like rewired the whole office. I'm like, nobody would do this except Jason. Like, this was hilarious.
You know, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you, and thank you. And there's, it just becomes part of your DNA. And after so long and growing up the way that I did, and, you know, you don't even look at a 14-hour day as a double shift. It's just normal. And, you know, one of the things that always sort of stood out to me was a comment from a guy by the name of Alan Smith, who ran Simon Malls in New England. And I would be going in there, you know, pitching Case Snow Management, and he'd be obviously like all those guys are in suit and tie. And he used to bust my chops. He said, you know what? You're the only guy that comes into my office with a white collared shirt and work boots on.
What a great combination.
Yeah. So I had, you know, office and field,
right? All,
you know, because I'd probably be coming off a job site or something when I was going to do that. But it was always part of my background, you know, was always field and growing up in the field. And then I had a great education behind me to understand, you know, how to build business with a great entrepreneurial spirit and some great mentors. So I always had that good balance of knowledge and, you know, in work ethic, you know, of the field and in business. So I think that's played a critical role, mm-hmm. certainly in helping me grow the business and helping design technology, right? I mean, I've sat countless hours designing technology with developers, and they have their way of wanting to do it, but they don't really understand what the field is like. Mm-hmm. So
right.
I'm saying, well, I've been in the plow truck at 2 o'clock in the morning, man, going 48 hours straight. If you think I want to look at my phone for 17 minutes and hit 45 buttons to, mm-hmm. you know, to log a service, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so we always try to build technology and communication and in terms of how can we make it easy for our network? Mm-hmm. How can we make it as simple and as painless for our network? And by the way, this is stuff that is being pressed down upon us from our customers. They want real-time information. They want validation. They want photo verification, GPS. God, I mean, they'd want a video of the guy plowing if you could give it to him, right? And that's just the world that we live in today. But what most people don't understand is how tough it is being in the field in those midnight hours when we're working the long shifts. Mm-hmm. So just putting compliance and technology, you know, on them as far as our, you know, mandatory is not, it's something we have to do because the business is headed in that direction. It doesn't mean it has to be complicated and painful.
Right. But you were pushing, you were driving for solutions that didn't exist in the industry. There wasn't a booth at symposium where you could go to and get all the stuff you wanted. You had to create it. And I saw that right from the beginning. You're like, we got to make our own stuff. Like, this doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because if we want to be the innovator and we want to be out ahead of everyone, we got to have the best stuff, whether it's software or communication or ease of use in the truck on apps and all that. And so again, you want to be Jason Case, then do all that. Good luck.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, most people
spend a lot of money.
Right. That's an enormous lift. And if you can, good for you, because it's good for the industry. That elevates the entire industry.
Yeah. And listen, the stuff that we're doing is not, a lot of it is innovative and very creative. And, you know, I compliment, you know, Case FMS's team right now. I mean, we are venturing into a new world of managing an international business, right? We have a Canadian marketplace we serve. We have a United States marketplace we serve. So there's cross-border complexities. And, you know, that's very new. And we are taking, you know, what's been working great in Canada and implementing that into the United States, and what's been working great in the States and implementing that in Canada. And that is, there are so many things we are working on right now, I think is going to really help change, maybe even the industry, who knows. But there's a lot of great technology out there. There's a lot of great, you know, new innovations that, you know, people need to explore and adopt. It's not going away. It's part of doing business today. If somebody thinks they're going to go out there and service and there's not going to be an application they have to use, then they should probably do something else, because this business is not where they're going to be successful if they don't want you to do it.
Well, yeah, that evolution's already in place and it's only become more pervasive. But so, good segue. I was going to get into Case FMS. So FMS, Facility Management Solutions. And I see, you know, you're not the only player in that area. You know, you have some good healthy competition in that space. But how did you make that decision to is this a complete rebranding of the entire organization? And how did How did you come to make that decision? Was it, were you pulled in by a client, or did you see an opportunity to jump on, or was this like a big strategic decision?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, we started out as a snow management business, and we were case, you know, snow management for, you know, for a long time, with our core competency obviously being snow and ice management, but asked repetitively, hey, could you guys manage our landscape? Could you guys manage our, you know, our pavement? Could you guys manage, you know, this on the exterior, our tree maintenance, whatever it was? And at first the answer was, you know, no, we'd like to stick to what we do well. And, you know, that was snow and ice. And it wasn't until, you know, we had a pretty big contract, Phil, and we only did snow for this customer. And they ended up letting us go because they wanted to bundle the service and they wanted to combine the landscaping and the snow together in one contract. And we didn't do landscape at the time. And that was a real eye opener for me. And at the time I knew that, listen, we have to diversify a little bit. We have to add some service lines in to be, you know, to work as a national provider, or just stay local and regional, right? I mean, it was a big inflection point in our business because we could have stayed local and regional, you know, and served our customers just in the snow and ice service line and nothing else. And we would have been fine. But if you want to grow, you have to take on, you know, you have to morph into what your customers need you to be. And that was a major inflection point in our business. And we had to start introducing service lines, work on service lines, train our teams on different service lines, educate, you know, get hire providers that were skilled to service landscaping and snow. And it was tough at the beginning. And I'm happy to say that our landscape division, I think, is going to be bigger than our snow division probably in the next year or two. It's been phenomenal. We built our technology the right way to scale up any different service lines. In fact, when COVID hit, we were asked to do janitorial. And we did for one of our customers. We did a tremendous amount of janitorial because our technology had the capability to track everything. And, you know, that was something our customer knew we had, and they leveraged that, and we did janitorial for them for, you know, about a year and a half. So it was a wonderful experience. Well, it was a tough experience, but what it did for us is really opened our eyes, said, wow, this platform is really capable of doing so much more than just snow and ice and land. And, you know, we don't do janitorial today. It's not a service line that we offer to our customers, but we have the capability to do so if we wanted to venture into that market. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my old company here in Michigan did janitorial services. In fact, they have the current janitorial contract for the airport here in Grand Rapids. They just won a national award for airports of that size for cleanliness. And you walk in that Grand Rapids airport, I mean, you could eat off the floor. It's spotless. Yeah. Every restroom, every sink, it's beautiful.
Tough to do in an airport.
I know, exactly. And so I think that's a great model. I'm pretty sure there was a guy from Michigan who told you right from the beginning you're going to end up cutting grass and was told no. So, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but I knew eventually you'd have to cut some grass.
Yeah.
But, no, it's all good, man. So one of the things I'm constantly asked is, you know, should I keep working for Case, you know, or should I go sell my own work, you know? Like, how do I make that decision? I'm a subcontractor now. I work as a sub. It's all good because they just hand me work. I don't have to go sell it every year. But how do I make that? People are always asking me my opinion. And one of the things I always say is, look, when I was running my business, we had hundreds of subcontractors that I was responsible for. And we treated them so well. And they never had to go sell this work. We did all that. We did all the sales work. We just handed them tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of work. And they could stay focused on their site business or whatever it was all the way up until December. And out of the clear blue sky would show up $200,000 worth of work that they never had to sell. They never had to sign a contract for. They never had to invoice for. We just took care of them. And that was a great symbiotic relationship that we had with our subcontractors. And yeah, they probably had some of their own work, but man, as long as we were feeding them, it was a wonderful relationship. Sometimes we had clients hand us an entire portfolio and we would call up the current vendor, the provider, and we'd go, "Hey, we're your new boss. Like, we just got handed the whole portfolio," you know? And we just retained all the current vendors. And it was a win-win-win. Everybody benefited. And so I want you to speak to that, because people are there, you know, a lot of this podcast goes out to a huge audience. And there's a lot of people thinking about that question about, you know, what's the value of working as a subcontractor? And I put in my own two cents, but I want to hear from Jason Case. Like, what's the benefits of working as a, not necessarily for Case per se, but as a sub? Like, how does that work?
It's a good question. I think it's something that it could be a whole nother podcast too, right, Phil?
Sure.
I mean, there's some really good.
But just high level. And actually, I know I'm probably making you uncomfortable here asking you the question. I want to actually give you a chance to.
I feel great about it.
Like, even if it's a commercial for Case, I want to hear what the benefit is, because I want to hear from your words.
We wouldn't be who we are without our provider network. It's just a fact. And, you know, we have some tremendous relationships out there. You know, these guys work tremendously hard to support our customers, and they do a fantastic job. And I'm super proud of all of them, because I know what they have to go through in today's environment to succeed. And it's hard to make money out there in this business today, with all the compliance and the risk management and the insurance and everything that you have to be responsible for. I can only give my opinion based on my experiences. And when I was building this business as a local company, I worked for all of them, every single one that existed at the time, the US maintenance, the SMGs, you name it, and we partnered with them. But I took a little bit of a different perspective. Instead of hating on, you know, national providers or, you know, bigger organizations, I stayed close. I learned from them. They actually made my business better. They held me accountable. They taught me that if I don't do X, Y, Z in this contract, I may not get paid because I'm not in compliance, or the customer won't pay me. And I learned the hard way myself a number of times. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't have some bitterness at the time, right? And going through those experiences. But in the end, those organizations made me a 100 times better company than I would have been if I didn't work for them. And the reason why that is because I partnered with them as much as they partnered with me, and I did it on purpose to learn from them. What are you guys doing? How can you make me better? And the work that they provided me was a great opportunity for us to help build an organization. Because like you said, I didn't have to do much to get to work. I had to give them a number or agree to a number, and I knew we could make it happen. And they kept me dense and local, so I didn't have to travel across a state to get it done. So there was no mobilization or very little. And we were able to really do a good job for our customers and grow the business. So, you know, my recommendation would be take the good out of it, because it's not going away. And if you decide not to work for any national player, then that's a business decision that, you know, certainly entitled to make. But the benefits of partnering could really change your business and help it grow. No question about it.
I'm a
direct result of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think the industry is going to fracture. I think there's going to be big FMS companies like Case that are going to be the controllers at the higher level. And then there's going to be a lot of other service providers that are going to be benefiting from those relationships, like you said. And we did the same thing with my business. I invested heavily in those contractors who were working for us and did free consulting work for them, really, honestly, made them better business people. So I'm a fan.
Well, that's why I think the unification, you know, needs to come back around in the industry. You know, I think we're all in this together. I don't think there's, you know, any bad companies really out there that, you know, I could think off the top of my head. I think every company has, you know, its strengths and weaknesses, no different than any other company in the world, right? So, you know, but if we want to be different as an industry, you know, unification is very important. And this podcast, I'll tell people right now, national businesses are not going away and they're not ever going away.
Right.
It's just part of the consolidation of corporate America. And corporate America really drives those compliance. It's not, these companies don't make up, hey, use this app, check in, check out, take these pictures. That comes from corporate America. They dictate what they want. And we have to make sure or ensure that it happens. And I think there's a lot of false perception out in the marketplace that, oh, it's, you know, Case forces me to do this, or this guy forced me to do that. I'm not forcing anyone to do anything. This is the contract that the guy signed with the customer, and they're enforcing it upon me. And I need partners that are going to, you know, make sure that happens out in the field.
Right. And elevate your game.
Elevate your game. And that's where I'm saying it does make you a better company. If you can follow the terms and conditions of the agreements, because they're tough, they're not easy. I'm going to let you know right now, it's not always, and it's not easy for the guys in the field to, you know, to complete. But the guys that can master it, their companies are going to excel way past the ones that can't, because they figured out how to build infrastructure, training, compliance, process, monitor and manage improvements in their business, put corrective actions in place when things don't go well. They have figured those things out. And if you can figure that out, your business is now prime for scalable growth. And it's going to happen. Just continue to do the right things.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole list of questions I had queued up for you. I'd love to get your perspective on things, but we're coming up on about an hour here. So there's two things I want to do. I can't have a podcast with Jason Case and not talk about the Amazing Race 23. So we're going to talk about that for a second. I want to hear about your personal life with you and Amy a little bit and your kids, and then just parting thoughts. So take us back to 2013, because you're reality TV royalty at this point, right?
Oh, I know. No, more has been than anything else. Like probably Amy's royalty at this point. What a great experience. You know, a quick little story. The snow and ice management business, I truly believe, got me on the show. We got asked to do an interview out in Los Angeles, and at the time we're supposed to fly out, the biggest blizzard hit in the Northeast, 2013. And like, when I tell you everything was shut down, Phil, highways, airports, you name it, train station shut down. It was inaccessible. There was nowhere we're flying to Hollywood. And here I am in the snow and ice business. So I'm going crazy trying to, you know, service customers, and I'm out there in my pickup truck plowing myself. And Amy's, we got to get to Hollywood. Well, there's nowhere we're getting there. We called the casting team, and they said, if you don't come, then you kind of missed your shot of being on the show. So we made a decision, Phil, to drive from Boston to Philadelphia, where Amy did the research and knew that was our connection flight to go to Hollywood.
Okay.
And the flight wasn't going to get delayed the following day, or we didn't see it getting delayed. We drove from Boston in my plow truck to Philadelphia. It took us over 13 hours to get there. And it was like the apocalypse. Tractor trailer knives, jackknifed all over the place.
All the way down 95.
People stranded on 95, freezing to death. And here I come in a plow truck, weaving through them, you know, at 20 miles an hour. And just making it worse. I'm burying them with my V plow. Snow is just cascading off of the plow as I'm driving down 95. And we ended up making the connection flight and got to Hollywood. In the casting team for CBS was like, how the heck did you guys get here? Because it was national news, and we told them the story, and they were just loving it. I mean, and it was a true story. That's what we did to make it happen. So
you're like, they're going to win no matter what. Just that's based how we, on
that's
that
how
story.
We got on the show. Yeah. But it was a great experience. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and then obviously you and Amy are married and you have children. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have 5 kids now. You know, which is a blessing, and it gets difficult to balance that family work life dynamic, but you know, you make it happen every day. And you know, my oldest is going to be 8 in a few weeks, and my youngest is 1.5 years. So it's a
short, well, you had a good example with your parents and your grandparents and growing up in a family like you did.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, it's really life is a blessing with the children. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited to share as much time as I can with them. So it's good.
Well, thank you. Is there anything you want to parting words? Is there anything we missed that you want to circle back to or elaborate on or should we leave it where it is?
I have a true passion for the industry. I love the industry. It's been so good to me. I've met so many wonderful, great people. I have heroes in the industry, mentors in the industry. You know, and I'm really thankful for having the opportunity to help, you know, be a name in the industry and to help grow the industry as much as I can and participate in it. And, you know, I'm always here for supporting, you know, any contractor out there in the marketplace. I've done so much work helping guys throughout my years because that's how I got there. Guys have helped me, and it's been very rewarding for me to do so. So I really, you know, encourage people to, you know, partner with our organization. We do have the best intentions for our customers and our providers and our employees. And, you know, I think there's a lot of cool things coming in the future for Case FMS. So excited. I'm excited to share it with the world.
That's great. Thank you, Jason. And I'm excited for you as well. I was thrilled when I heard the rebranding to FMS. I think that's a brilliant move. And I think that's just going to set you guys up to just continue to be the innovators in the industry and help the industry rise up and with new technology and new processes. And you're still a young guy, man. I'm excited to see what happens, you know?
We'll see.
Yeah. All right, Jason. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.